Hey, before we start this episode, it's Ian and Carrie. We want to say thank you again. Carrie, each week we're getting more and more listeners, and that's really exciting because that means your stories are going further and further to more and more unique ears.
And we're very grateful, appreciative. We want to thank everybody who's taken the time to listen to these wacky tales, downloaded them on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or the Last Stop Penn Station website. We have some merchandise available on Pro Wrestling Tees, the He Eats Breakfast, the Camel shirt, the Last Stop Penn Station shirts. We're not doing this to make any money, but they're cool items. And we might have some more up there by the time this rolls out. We're on our march to the 75 five-star ratings on iTunes.
We are, and we're rapidly approaching that, Carrie. And once we get to 75, we're going to unleash the bonus episode of you working for Empire Industries. I want to stress that this may be the funniest story I've ever heard you tell. Carrie's time working as a telemarketer selling degreaser.
The all-purpose cleaner degreaser, 40-to-1 water soluble.
40-to-1. We'll leave it there. If you understand proportions, that is a small portion.
And you could use it in the steam jenny, the power cleaner, or the good old bucket and brush method. You could use it anywhere. Sort of like those girls that were at the show world.
Anyway. Well, before we got to make them buy the cow because they're getting the milk for free right now, Carrie. So we want to thank you for joining us as part two of New Orleans. We thought we were going 10 this season. We're probably going to end up at, you know, maybe 11 or 12 episodes. We still got Madison Square Garden to go in our people, places, things in the places category here. But we're really overwhelmed and excited. We don't have any ads or sponsors on the podcast. We're doing this because we want to get Carrie's story out. We know we can break this news. Carrie's book, or at least part of the manuscript, is being edited at this point. And we're excited to know that that's getting a little closer to fruition.
Right. My cousin, Mike G, who's mentioned a award-winning, he had his Woodstock Back to Yazgir's Farm book. That's, if anyone's a real rock and roll fan or a fan of Woodstock history, at least, it's one of the best reference books on that. And so Mike's been in the writing business all his life. And Ian, AJ, other people have just been sort of pushing me. And we're working on it right now.
Awesome. And that'll be a great companion to this podcast as well. We're getting closer to the end of season one. And Carrie, you know, before we get into this episode, I think your story is a tale of redemption. I think it's something that can show that if you can do it, anybody can. And I think we're going to see some of those elements. I think times get dark in this episode, to forewarn our audience.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, it's a walk on the wild side. And I left out a little piece in episode 9, which we're going to start episode 10 with to fill the timeline in right. So I was listening to it today. So let's get going.
All right, let's go.
Welcome one and all to Last Stop Penn Station podcast featuring Carrie Silkin and Ian Riccoboni. They dive deep into Carrie's wealth of stories, and no subject is off limits. From the world of wrestling to his ticket agency, growing up in New Jersey, drug-fueled underground days, hustling in the French Quarter of New Orleans, and endless days and nights in New York City, every story is worth telling.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to Last Stop Penn Station. Ian Riccoboni, Carrie Silkin, you are the man of honor. And Carrie, last time we left off in New Orleans, we had talked about your successful foray into ticket hustling at LSU. We talked about your not so successful run at the Grambling State Game at the Superdome. But then we were talking about things getting a little lighter. We talked about Liberal Libby coming to town, the stern warning that Liberal Libby might be interested in making some moves. She was a mover and a shaker.
She was. And I got to stop you here because I was listening today in preparation for this episode. I was listening to our previous episode. Folks, sometimes we take a few weeks off in between doing these. We don't do them on a regular basis. Ian's kind enough between his two kids and his Ring of Honor job and his other job to fit this in, along with my friend AJ Bassan Creative, who's also dealing with a family situation and running a business. And, you know, they've basically been donating their time to do this. So we don't get to do them. So I wanted to refresh my memory. And I listened back to episode 9. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't usually, you know, you always hear singers say they don't like to listen to their own music.
Sure. That's the same for or broadcasters. Actors, yeah. Right?
Do you like to listen to
them? No, I don't go back. I painstakingly go back and listen to things I've called. It's the only way to get better, but it sucks. It really sucks.
And you, this past weekend at the Ring of Honor show, he stuck me on, handed me the microphone.
I did.
Which I'd never done before, which was really fun.
Yeah. Oh, but you did great.
I listened back or watched back because Honor Club broadcast the shows live. If you're a Ring of Honor fan, and I think a lot of people listening are, please join Honor Club. You get to see most of the shows except the pay-per-views. Yep. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
you see all the shows except the pay-per-views.
40 a year, yeah.
For, you know, as part of the paltry fee.
$9.99 a month, yeah.
And not to mention the complete back catalog.
Yeah.
It's not every moment, but 75%.
Yeah, everything from 2011 up, and then we are working on editing the music out of the back events, and those are going to be added slowly but surely.
So, Ian, I was, you know, at the show. I'll sit at the table by ringside. I'll mosey to the back. Some matches, you know, I just want to go in the back and take a leash or something. How do you stay out there for 3 hours? And my goal that night was to, you know, Bobby Cruz likes to have a few pops.
Ah,
and
well,
it was his birthday.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, but at this venue,
the beers
were giant.
Giant. Yeah. It was if you like beer, this was the place.
They usually try to shortcake you.
No.
But they were, AJ, these were like, they weren't pints. They were, I don't know what they were.
Like 32 ounces.
Right.
Yeah, like Wawa.
And I'm like, Bobby Cruz, we love you. And it was his birthday. He's the only man in the world who advertises his birthday. So I said to Ian earlier, I said, my goal is to make this guy have to go pee because he has to stay out there the whole night, as does Ian.
Right.
And, you know, I have that luxury not to. But anyway, Ian, I walked over by Ian and Caprice Coleman, and he just sort of handed me the combination headphone microphone.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. And
yeah.
Thanks for doing that. I want to do it again.
Yeah. You did great. In fact, it was such a surprise that Todd Sinclair asked me, hey, Gary did a great job. When did you guys figure that out?
Well, Todd's got a fear of, he says he has a fear of public speaking.
He's a wonderful public speaker. I've seen him address dozens of people at once.
And to be as the best referee in pro wrestling.
Right.
And whether he's not considering that a speaking role, but it is.
Yeah. You gotta be comfortable in public, you know, a lot of the same elements.
So, Now I throw myself.
Well, you'd gone back, and we were talking about going back to episode 9.
So yep. I was listening to episode 9, and it's a good episode. And if you're maybe just joining the podcast right now, if you like the bizarre, if you like oddballs, if you like to walk on the wild side, get down with these episodes. Yep. Because episode 9 was a walk on the wild side. And I realized as we were closing episode 9, where I was talking about the whole series of getting to New Orleans and the bad circumstances of going there and the girl that helped me and me getting a place, so on and so forth, and starting to hustle tickets, I left some stuff out, and I left out a key story. And in episode 8, I talk about towards the end, and there was, and you pointed out, I said, you know, there was no Saints game and there was no LSU game. And you said, oh, I didn't ever thought about that. There's only eight games.
Yeah.
Eight home games.
Right.
So there was nothing primary for me to make money with. So there was this Beach Boys show, which I referenced. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't talk about was what happened after the Beach Boys show. We jumped ahead from the Beach Boys show to me going the stupidest white man in the world, going to the Grambling State, Morgan State, you know, the great black colleges.
Yeah,
with a HBCUs, sold out,
yeah.
Right, the sold out game at the Superdome, and rightly getting arrested. I had no business being there. And talk about being stupid. But anyway, there's a story that came up. And I'm not embarrassed about many things, but when I tell this story, you want to talk about dereliction. You want to talk about doing some really stupid shit under the influence. I'm going to tell you about it.
You didn't say Mike Love was your favorite Beach Boy, did you? Was that the dereliction?
No.
Okay.
Brian Wilson wasn't part of that Beach Boys show. Oh. But I went to the Beach Boys show. Mm-hmm. And
this is Kokomo era.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was, as I had said, it was a matinee. And I maybe made $100, $120. I thought I was like, I was rolling in dough.
High on the hog.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when I left the Beach Boys show, I had been in New Orleans probably about, by this time, maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And despite my friendship with these people at the Alpine Bar, where I met Debbie, where I met Jim Russell, this artist who's going to come into this story a little bit more further on, and this other crew of local degenerates, it was a... We talked about this in the last episode, but I'll give you the picture again. It was a local pub, didn't really draw a lot of tourists, even though it was near Jackson Square. Mm-hmm. The clientele were locals, and it was a hard drinking, partying crowd. Yet, despite my dear love of cocaine in that era, somehow I hadn't come across any, and I know that I asked these people, mm-hmm. and they were not people, they weren't just drinkers, they were partiers, but for whatever reason, cocaine hadn't entered the picture yet. Maybe I didn't know all of them well enough yet.
Yeah.
So
can I ask a dumb question as someone that's never used drugs?
Certainly.
Is there a point where it escalates in a friendship? I mean, if I was to ask somebody for marijuana, I'm sure somebody could point me in the direction of marijuana. I feel like I would need to know somebody on a different level to ask for cocaine, whether because of the pressure society's created or either the stigma or even the cost associated with it.
Cocaine users would be happy to tell you that they could get you some. Do you have any money?
Okay.
Gotcha. As opposed to, hey, I got some here. Let's go do something.
Gotcha. Okay.
So despite my friendships, and I'm sure I must've asked once again, but, I hadn't done any. So I leave the Beach Boys show, mm-hmm. and it was probably 5 p.m. And when I went into the Beach Boys show, I started drinking some of those giant Budweisers like Bobby Cruz. and I could hold my liquor pretty good, but I had I had that good happy buzz going. But it was more than a happy buzz. And all of a sudden, I hadn't done any coke for like all these weeks, which for me at that point was quite a long time. So I had this idea because I want to get some coke, and these people at the Alpine, you know, they're not helping me yet, or they don't know where to get it or whatever. That's not the place to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find some. Mm-hmm. I know I could find some. I got like $100, $120, $150. I'm a good drug addict. Yeah. I could find. So what did I do? I'm thinking, where would I go? I would see the same people on Bourbon Street every day, whether it was the, how they have those outdoor bars.
Sure.
Right. The bartenders.
Mm-hmm.
the prostitutes of that era.
We talked a little bit about them last time.
Yeah. And so I would see the same people. And there were there was also these guys that street performers, and there were these guys that would tap dance for money.
Oh, that's interesting.
And yeah, and they had a gimmick. It's not as bad as the Murphy, by the way.
Okay.
But they'd say, for $1, I could tell you where you got those shoes. I bet I could tell you where you got those shoes. Yeah. People are thinking the shoe store, right?
Yeah.
The guy, he's like, yeah, here. You got those shoes right on Bourbon Street.
Ah.
Right now. So these guys who tap dance, I'm thinking these are local kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to know a spot. They were like late teens, early 20s. And so I would see, I had no relationship with them except seeing them. So, but I knew they come there every day.
Gotcha.
So the chance of getting ripped off is lessened just because.
There's some accountability
right
at that point. Yeah.
So I went up to one of these random guys. And I said, hey, listen, do you know where I could get some coke? And he's like, yeah. He goes, but we have to take a ride. You know, like where I live, I could get it. And I'm asking him, you know, how do they like, do they sell like half grams, 25, da, 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 da. And he's like, yeah, yeah, you know, you get 25 for $50, you know, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So I forget exactly how the my money was rolling, but...
If I can interrupt you, do you have any fear at this point?
Well, I had the no fear alcohol in me.
Okay. Cause I was going to say, I get, you know, anytime, and this might just be me, whether it's an Uber or Lyft or whomever, there's a part of me saying, hey, so a stranger's driving or a taxi and you could end up anywhere.
Well, that's what happened.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So I took this guy into my confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, we just have to go to where I where I live. And the guys are right on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, to the best of my recollection, I was going to buy three $25 things and give him a 25 for his trouble. And we get in a cab. And I don't know how much traveling you've done around New Orleans, except being right.
I've done a little bit. I've gone over the longest bridge in the U.S. and I've done.
Well, I might have went over that one.
Okay.
Because we left. Excuse me. We left New Orleans. We left French Quarter, and out of what I thought was New Orleans, and we're driving.
Yeah.
And did you ever see? What's the name of that great TV series that? Was about the streets of Baltimore that was on
The Wire.
Thank you.
Yep.
In The Wire,
mm-hmm.
there's the one episode where the young kids are slinging the dope from the tall projects.
No, I don't recall that.
Yeah, they have, you know, they were classic old school projects, and we're driving over this bridge and we're getting off the exit and it's the projects. And there are guys on the street everywhere. And the guy says to me, well, give me the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I was at that point, he's either going to just take it and not come back.
Right.
And he says to me, I just got to see these guys over there. He goes, I'm just going to go get it. Come right back.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, and you'll see me tomorrow. You know, everything's cool. He was a cool cookie.
Yeah.
So. For my $100, he probably bought maybe at the most $25 worth, telling me that was $75 worth.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no argument. You know, what am I going to do? What am I going to argue with him? And I have this small bag that I knew was not $75 worth, but I was in no position to argue. And, I said, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cab driver, who is now, imagine you're the cab driver.
Well, he's an accessory at this point.
Right. Yeah. He knows where we're going.
Right.
He knows what we're doing, literally.
Yeah, he's
getting out.
Right.
And he's waiting. I said to the guy, I'm going to go back. And I don't even think he said a word. He just, wow. Yeah, all right. So I have my little bag of cocaine. Mm-hmm. And I knew that it was, at that point, the stupidity factor was overwhelming the alcohol factor. And even though I had the stuff, it was like, this wasn't a good idea. And as we're driving, and now we're back on that bridge, it probably was like 10 more minutes had gone by.
Yeah.
It was the first time the cab driver said anything.
Wow.
And you know what he said to me?
What's that?
My man, if I would have told you, get the fuck out of my cab, those guys would have killed you. Or they might have just taken all your clothes mm-hmm. and your shoes, and you'd have been there, and that'd have been the end. And I was just like, literally speechless. And the guy was kind enough not to do that to me. I made it back to the French Quarter with my little stash of cocaine, going up to my room, right? Yeah. And it was bad. And I mean, the cocaine was okay, but it was just really silly. Now, don't forget, I made the $100. My bankroll went from like 50 to like 150.
Yeah.
And now it's back to 50.
Yeah.
And I have the coke and I'm doing the coke and it was pretty good. And I got, I get a real good buzz. So when you get a real good buzz on coke, in order to come, like you do the coke and then you want to come down. And we don't recommend this for anyone, yeah, but it's just part of the story.
Yeah.
So, but anyone who's used this will understand, you know, you're primed to start drinking more.
Okay.
So here's the bottom line. When the night ended at approximately 1 a.m, mm-hmm. I had obviously no cocaine.
Right.
And $15.
Oh, my goodness.
And when I woke up, I drank myself to sleep. And when I woke up the next day, I'm like, what the hell did I do?
Yeah.
I went from a nice, successful, small score at the Beach Boys
right.
to pissing it away, as my father would say.
Yeah.
And there I am with $15. And it's a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I going to do now? And it hadn't been, don't forget, I referenced borrowing money from Debbie. I hadn't borrowed money yet. So, what happened was I go out, I get a coffee, and I had a newspaper. Like, what a newspaper. And I'm looking like, what could be going on? How could I go? And I saw that there was women's tennis.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Like,
at the lakefront.
Which Ring of Honor's
right?
Around. Yeah, we've sold out the lake.
There was women's tennis at the lakefront, and I'm thinking, well, I've got like $14 now,
yeah,
and I got to take a bus there. Can I make the $10 grow? Like flip a few tickets?
Yeah.
So I went to the women's tennis.
Wow.
And it wasn't a major event. And there weren't a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there was no competition.
Yeah.
So, and there was really no one selling tickets. I wasn't going to buy them out of the window. I didn't have enough money. Yeah. So I finally found someone who sold me two tickets for like, you know, five each. That's okay. All I had.
Yeah.
That's it. I got five each. You want it?
Yeah.
And I wound up turning over. I've got two tickets and there were two ladies who needed tickets and the tickets might've been $15 and they bought the two tickets for $15 each.
Wow.
And I doubled.
Yeah.
I doubled my bankroll and I knew, let me just get out of here.
Yeah.
And I took the bus back, and at which point I called my friend Bo, who had the souvenir stores at Stadium, who I worked for those years, who, because of his $1,500 bonus, I was able to get to New Orleans.
Right.
And he wired me a few dollars to get me through that week, which led me to the story we talked about with Grambling States.
Sure.
And I just felt compelled to throw that story in there. Yeah. It's horrible.
Well, when you and I talked about the reasons for doing this, we talked about, you know, the redemption. You know, I think a lot of people see your generous exterior. I think a lot of people see, you know, where Ring of Honor is right now and know what you've done. You know, we've talked about it before. There was really only one weekend that was truly profitable in the history of Ring of Honor when you owned it, despite, you know, bringing in the best stars and the biggest talent. Was, I think, the crux of doing this for me, and is to show people that, you know, where you were and where you are and who you are now. And that I don't think we take enough time to talk about the transformation and the change. And I, for me, this always felt like a moment where you had the first realization that you might have a problem.
Well, it wasn't, but this was one of many. It was so ridiculous what I did, but let's try to uplift this with some fun dirty stories.
Yeah, we specifically with Madison Square Garden, I think we'll talk a lot about where you have been and to, you know, the crowning achievement coming out.
We're going to get to that, but let's continue with this New Orleans saga. Sure. So I made it through the week.
Yep.
And I got closer with this girl, Debbie, borrowed money.
Yeah.
I did the football game where I got arrested and was back out. And Debbie had told me about this sister of hers, Libby.
Okay.
And that she, for whatever reason, this girl likes to mess around with her boyfriends. And I swear to you, I had no intention of, and I wasn't even thinking of it. And the football season was coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
There was really no money to be made. And at the same time, I had gotten closer with this guy, Jim Russell, who I mentioned was a poster artist.
Right.
And I believe he's passed away, but I'll have to put up some of his poster work. Mm-hmm. He was really good, and he would do an annual poster. So Jim told me, he was drunk every day, but he had told me, listen, when my poster comes out for the 86 season, if you want to help, you know, you're a good hustler, you know, I'd want you to go around to all the stores and, you know, push it, you know, you give them on consignment, blah, 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 and account for it. You know, I'll give you a percentage. But that wasn't happening until January.
Right. And you still have at least December and the end of November, usually.
Now, what was also going to be happening at the end of January, or maybe I think at this time it was the end of January, was New Orleans was getting the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
Which was the famous Bears Patriots with Refrigerator Perry on the Bears, who also participated in WrestleMania too.
right Yeah, they held the camel.
and Doug Flutie
on the Patriots
in New England. So I'm there, it was probably early December, so I have the promise, verbal promise from Jim Russell that I could work his artwork. I have, you know, I'm thinking about the Super Bowl, and Freddie the Weeper, who I'd become friends with, you know, marginally from working with Bo all those years, and Bo, who was in the souvenir game,
right?
He had interest in maybe. I spoke to them. You know, he helped me.
Yeah,
he was sort of an enabler. But he loved me. I loved him, and we still talk. And I had spoken on the phone, and I might have blown it up, like, oh, I have some good connections here, and he wanted to maybe, this is once again early December, talking about coming down for the Super Bowl, and Freddie coming down for the Super Bowl to hustle.
Awesome.
So what happened was, And Liberal Libby was on her way. I don't know if she even got there yet in December, but don't worry, we'll get to her.
Okay.
So
I'm holding you to that.
So it was, you know, I was at the end of the road down there. So what am I going to do? I think I worked one last Saints game that was halfway decent. I don't know why, but it was. And I had a couple hundred dollars. And I was able to get a plane back.
Okay.
And it returned me to New York. And I hadn't spoken to my parents for like a few months.
Wow.
That was bad. Yeah. You know, they didn't know. And I remember calling my father, and when he answered the phone, I'm like, "Hey, Dad." He goes, "What do you want?" I'm like, he says, "We didn't know if your mother thinks you're dead."
Did that hurt?
Yeah, that was bad. And I said, "No, listen, I'm sorry." And I did my usual "I'm sorry" routine, and I came back, and they let me come to the house.
Okay.
Right, and.
You're about 30 at this point?
I was right around 30. Yeah.
Okay.
So my game plan was this. I'm going to come back and I'm going to start going to the city every day. And I had Freddie's number and I'm going to try to do this ticket thing. I gained experience in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go into the city every day and hustle and try to get through this season and then return to New Orleans in mid-January. The Mardi Gras was very early that year also. Okay. You know how the Mardi Gras date varies with
it does.
With what, Easter or something?
Ash Wednesday.
Thank you.
Yep.
So it was extremely early Mardi Gras. So I came back and I would go into the city, and that's when I really started doing the tickets on a daily basis. Wow. I remember one of the big events, and if I gave you guys 20 guesses of what the big event was, you'd say, well, the Knicks, things.
Yeah, just had Patrick Ewing.
Right.
So then Bernard King, they were probably pretty good.
Right. And, you had the major shows and kind of, but there was one thing that you could go to every day, four times a day. And always make money. And I just gave that was the big hint. And it's still there. And I bet you've gone to it.
Four times a day. Wow. Oh, geez.
What run? It's like the beginning of a joke. What runs four times a day and for 6 weeks?
The Ringling Brothers?
Close.
Okay.
The Christmas show at Radio City.
Oh, yeah.
The Christmas show at Radio City at that point in time was a good ticket.
Wow.
It was just different. Not to jump ahead, but when I started working for these brokers, I'm not talking about the street, but working in these offices, and we're going to get to these guys that helped me along the way. Billy from Union Tickets, who, Bully Ray's friends with, and some other guys. We'll talk all about them. Everybody would buy Christmas. Besides everything else, you'd buy Christmas shows, and especially those Saturday and Sunday performances.
Yeah.
They ran. How are those Rockettes legs stayed on? They had like 9 a.m., 11:30, 2:30, 4:30, 7:30.
How?
And so you could go to Radio City, potentially, and there was a lot of competition.
Sure.
But even if there were, sometimes the move was, ooh, the Rangers are playing the Devils on a Saturday matinee. All the guys will be there. I'll go to Radio City.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So I started doing the tickets full time, whether it was the Garden, and I developed a really good, relationship with Freddie the Weeper, who's a really interesting character. Freddie was a kind man. He lived his whole life. His whole purpose of his life, besides playing horses and drinking.
So you put playing horses as the...
besides playing horses and drinking, his number one purpose was to take care of his mother.
That's
which, but at the same time, and I listen, I come from a long line of I know enabling at its finest because my parents were great enablers. So Freddie's mom enabled him. Mm. And he lived at home with her. She was probably at this stage, maybe in her late 60s, mid to late 60s. But
how old would you say he was about? Also,
Freddie was probably, if I was 30, he was probably maybe 45.
Okay.
So Freddie's story, I would ask him. He never used to like, he didn't like to show any emotion. And I would ask him like how he got started doing this. And he would always tell me, you don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. And well, when I finally got him to open up, he started after high school, his only real straight job he had.
Uh-oh. Was he with the camel at the show world?
No. Okay. He was a golf caddy.
That's not what I would expect.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And, you know, my friend Dustin, who you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Dustin knows, we all knew Freddie. AJ, did you ever meet Freddie? Maybe at a garden event at some point we went. But Freddie was a very rotund guy. And the funny thing, you know, and so, but he fancied himself or claimed to be a scratch golfer as well as a championship caliber bowler.
Well, I mean, if there's, you know, for our rotund friends,
right, like Jackie Gleason. There you go. Okay. All right. So, but the Weeper had a good heart. The Weeper had a big heart, and he found his way into. He found his way into the ticket game somehow. Mm-hmm. I never really got the precise moment of when he got involved with tickets, mm-hmm. but he was involved from the mid 70s on.
Okay.
So by the time I had gotten to know him, he was a regular. Well, we talked in earlier episodes about the off-track betting underneath in Penn Station.
Right.
He was a regular, like, checking into work. And I know I'm talking about things we've spoken about before, but once again, there was this group of guys, Freddie the Weeper, Silent Sidney, Lenny the Mooch, mm-hmm. and they were sort of like street ticket wholesalers. And as I'd said in a previous episode, they would have tickets on them in most cases for the upcoming Knicks and Ranger games and the upcoming concerts that were. So if AC/DC was to go on sale for a late January show, a guy like Sidney, who was better with his money than Freddie would, you know, they would. When the tickets would go on sale, Freddie would primarily just sell them all to a broker. Gotcha. Maybe he'd keep a couple, but he didn't care. Oh, I don't want to say his motto was, oh, why did I get involved? So if he would sell them all, he'd be like, oh, why did I sell all those AC/DCs? I should have kept some. Sidney was a better businessman. And Sidney... I call him Silent Sidney because he had throat cancer and he didn't want to get one of those voice box kind of gimmicks.
Right.
So Sidney would write on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And like when Freddie and Sidney knew each other so well,
yeah.
Freddie could talk to Sidney.
Really?
And Sidney would, you know, answer him.
Yeah.
Freddie understood.
Wow, through gesticulations?
Yeah, yeah. No, just he could read his lips.
Oh, okay.
He could read his lips. There was two words that I definitely understood from Sidney.
Can we say them on the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Because we've said everything. Because Sidney used to probably, if there was some kind of statistic of the person who got bothered the most for money in his life. Because of all these scalpers would know that Sidney, you could always say, hey, Sidney, can I get 10? Sidney, can I get 20? Sidney, can I get this? He all day, all night, right? So Sidney was the master of looking at these guys and going,
Ah, okay. Yeah, it's the two words you'd all expect.
Right. Right. And I, you know, but Sidney was a good guy. I know I'm getting off track here. I remember one time, Sidney was also a high roller in Atlantic City.
Really?
Yeah. He was good with his money, but he liked to gamble. And this is back in the era when you just had like resorts.
Yeah.
And Trump just opened the, not the Taj Mahal.
The Plaza.
Right.
Yep.
And Sidney was comped down there.
By Merv Griffin himself. Right.
And I remember going down, but back to Freddie. So I cultivated this friendship with Freddie, and he liked me. And he liked me because I was, compared to a lot of these guys, the baby dumplings of the world. Mm-hmm. The Ralph the Mummies of the world.
Ralph the Mummy, that's a new one.
Who we'll get to.
Yeah.
Well, Ralph the Mummy, he had a number of nicknames. He had three that I could think of.
Really?
Ralph was one of them. He had three. He had Ralph.
Yep.
And then he was called the Mummy. Why was he called the Mummy? Because he had a little problem with crack cocaine.
Oh.
So when he would do a hit of the crack cocaine, he became mummified.
Oh my goodness.
So sometimes Freddie would be like, Ralph, I gave you two Ranger tickets. You still got them? Like, because Ralph wouldn't even have the ability to say needs tickets. He would just be mummified. Now, would you like to know his third name?
Sure.
Susan.
Oh, was that a
well, once in a while?
Alter ego?
You would be, yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know what we hear. You know all these terms.
Sure.
Once in a while, he would wear a red sequins dress.
Okay.
And then he was Susan.
Yeah. So I mean, that just sounds like cross dressing. And so I mean, there's different on the LGBTQ spectrum. We can go into that. And for any questions, I'd like to refer anybody to the Bradbury Sullivan Community Center in Allentown, Pennsylvania. They are a great group. I'm personally partnering with them on an upcoming initiative, top secret. Can't reveal it, but it's fun and exciting and supports LGBT youth in Allentown. So we'll talk about that. But that's just normal identity play. And yeah.
So,
Susan, yes.
I was more.
Did you know the Mummy more, or Ralph more, or Susan more, do you think?
Susan the least.
Okay.
But there was one story. It's not a long story, but it's a good little tidbit. A lot of these guys, Mike the Bag,
mm-hmm.
he was a guy who had the wife, the kids, the boat club, the job on Park Avenue, who drank himself to Penn Station. Mm. Baby Dumplings, Charlie, he had a wife and a daughter and a good job, and he drank and coked his way to the streets of Manhattan.
Mm.
The Mummy, Ralph, he was like... I think it was Pakistan, Indian. I don't know how he got there. Same with Tommy Indio, King of Socks.
King of Socks. Okay. Tell me a little more about him.
Well, he was another guy. I don't know how he got there. He was just there. But they all screwed up.
Yeah.
And but anyway.
Freddie the Weeper seemed to like you a little more and saw you differently, at least.
He saw me differently.
Yeah.
So. With Ralph, he would be around, and when he wasn't all high, he was sort of reliable, but he was very erratic. Mm. And what I was going to say was, all those guys, Dumplings, Mike the Bags, White Pops.
Is that the same as Phony Pops or different?
No.
Different? Okay.
White Pops, Eddie the Foot, all these guys, they were homeless. So they would have to, Radio John, they would have to make do. So what did they do? At the worst case scenario, they would stay in Penn Station, which at the time, the cops didn't
run you out.
Right.
Yeah.
But if they had a few dollars, they would, you know, get a cheap hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would go to the YMCA.
Yeah.
They go to the Y. But if they only had a few bucks and they really didn't want to go in Penn Station, one of the moves, and there was this, there was another guy I knew, this big African-American. He fancied himself as a small-time ticket scalper and a Coke dealer. He went under the name of Broadway.
Oh.
And what they would do.
That's very distinguished.
Only had a few dollars was they would go to the all-night movies.
Now, I'm not familiar. I'm assuming those are adult movies?
Well, no, not necessarily.
Okay.
They had the adult ones, and they all... So, the other ones they had were these... There was the period of time where those kung fu movies were popular.
Yeah.
And on some of these programs we like to... I like to watch. I know AJ and I... The Deuce.
Yeah.
You know, they show you the old 42nd Street. You know, you always see, you know, Jackie Chan and or Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee at the time, yeah.
And anyway, The Mummy hadn't been around for over a week, which was unusual. And I don't know if I was worried about him, but I just hadn't seen him. And I asked Tommy Indio, King of Socks, you know, he was like, buddy, I go, where's The Mummy? He goes, I don't know. Maybe Big Nibble. I go, what?
Hey, wow.
I said, where? He goes, Big Apple. I go, what? Well, what he's saying was there was a theater. Do you remember, this might be before your time, there was a Nathan's on 43rd, and right by the Times Square intersection, there was a Nathan's like sort of 40 between, on 7th between 42nd and 43rd. Well, somewhere next to that, I think it was on the 7th Avenue blocks, was the Big Apple XXX. Imagine this, right where the ball drops.
Yeah. me and Ryan Ginley have been down there, but I've taken my kids there, my wife there. We saw Hades. I mean, my wife and I, before we met you for Hadestown, we were right down that area. That's an area I feel safe taking, right. You know, a 1 and 3 year old. But
so what the King of Socks was trying to tell me was that The Mummy, they nicknamed the theater the Big Nipple.
The Big Nipple. Okay.
So
I'm sure that's appropriate considering the films that they were probably screening.
Right. So finally I see Ralph.
Mm.
And I said, Mummy, you all right? He goes, okay, all right. I go, where you been? He goes, I had Big Nipple. I go, how long? He goes, 8 days.
Wow. Wow, talk about a return on investment.
I go, 8 days. I go, what do they charge you? He goes, $6. You pay one time.
Wow.
I said, you stay in there for $6. Now, you got to understand, these places were infested with drug users, prostitutes, all kinds of sexual activity. Nothing was monitored.
Yeah.
So and it's like Ralph didn't have, despite his crack habit, he doesn't have enough money to sustain an 8-day crack binge.
Right.
So I said, how did you eat? He goes, I'm friends with the guard. He go to Nathan's, get me a hot dog.
Poor man. So, poor Mummy.
So I said, Mummy, what? I gave him a loaded question.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple of questions.
I said, hey, Mummy, no funny business in there. Huh? He says, oh, plenty funny business. He goes, listen. I go, well, I said, what was the worst thing? He goes, well, you see, 3 theaters, A, B, C. A, straight movie, sex movie. B, gay movie. See kung fu movie.
So I hate to interrupt, but is there a kung fu movie at the set?
That's what it was. So at 4, the mummy tells me, and I go, what was the low moment of the day? He goes, I'll tell you the low moment of the day. 4:30 a.m. I said, why was that the low moment? He goes, well, you see, at 4 a.m., they shut down straight movie to clean theater. So everyone I go into gay movie because I can't stand kung fu. You know, now you can't sleep. So I said, all right. So he goes, so now I'm in B at 4:30. They go, so at 4:30, the whole place has to go into C.
Oh, they're shoveling everybody down.
They did a thorough cleaning.
At least it's sanitary, right?
You got A and B. So he goes, now I'm in, now everybody in C. And, you know, they're fighting. He goes, no way to sleep. So, which brought me to another question. I said, well, how do you sleep? You know, first of all, you got to be worried about being molested.
And shrapnel, right?
Yeah. And you got to be worried about being pickpocketed.
Right.
I'm trying to stay on track here, but I got a good pickpocket story from the great Mike the Bag. you got to be worried about people going in your pockets.
Yeah.
You got to be worried about everything. And you also got to be, I said, you got to be worried about sleeping. I said, how do you sleep? You know, like where you're comfortable. I mean, I understand you could sit in the chair and just sort of sleep. He goes, no, I got way to do it much better. He goes, I wait till 6 a.m. so I know theater A and B at least floor clean. And I go, you don't sleep on the floor, do you? He goes, no, are you crazy? He goes, what I do is, now they had the old school movie, you know, like the chair like folds down.
Right.
So The Mummy allegedly, supposedly was able to take 1, 2, 3, 4 chairs.
Yeah.
So you got like a little 8 6 or 8 inches, and he was able to lay on his side and hope that he didn't. You know, there was probably a couple of times where he rolled off.
Right.
But it was onto a potentially clean floor in theater A or B.
There you go.
So The Mummy spent 8 days at the Big Nipple.
It's a big
and that so was,
there's been stories in man's history where 8 days is very important. and now The Mummy is he has his own, but
so the we're supposed to be talking about New Orleans.
Yeah, we're in the Big Apple and next to the Nathans. We get back on
it
target,
lasted though. That Big Nipple was there for a long time. It's incredible.
It's amazing. I lived there for 4 years. I just missed all of it. Just missed it.
So I cultivated this friendship with Freddie.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were totally disgusted with me. Mm. I would stay there some nights. I would crash at other friends' houses.
Yeah.
This and that. But I was making a few bucks. I was spending the money. I was making it. But my grand plan was to return to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And I had also contacted Bo, and Bo was gonna come down to New Orleans and scout out a place, because he had, through his connections with the Yankees and the Mets,
mm-hmm.
and primarily in the beginning, he would sell whatever he could bootlegged.
Sure.
And he wouldn't be embarrassed. He listens to us.
Yeah.
But eventually the Yankees told
it's probably him, better for
and
them
there's
to
that
get a
stands.
Cut.
I don't know if you know the old state.
Yeah,
well, it's still there.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, there were these the stores that were across the street. The Yankees came to these guys with lawyers, but not like there. It was more like verbal. Like, look, you got to buy from us.
Right.
They didn't come there with we're shutting you down.
Sure.
It did happen at the U.S. Open though.
Okay.
And it happened with some of those rock concerts I mentioned
when
he was at Shea.
Yeah.
But thank God for the New York Transit Authority. Do you know the New York Transit Authority police trump?
Really?
Trump a lot of things.
I didn't know
because that New York Transit Authority property is like its own planet.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so that's that. We'll get into that, you know, because I remember there was at the Who, I think it was either the Who or the police. I think it was the Who. And they came with the marshals and the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And this one sergeant, I'll get his name from Bo,
mm-hmm.
the guy that ran that station, that 7 train station, who was the transit, who was the king. He shouldn't be a sergeant. He was the king.
Yeah.
He just told these lawyers, get the fuck off my.
Wow.
Thing. Right. This guy's been here. You know, he could sell.
Yeah.
So I had the Weber in place to come down for the Super Bowl.
Okay, you're building
a
team.
I had Jim Russell, the artist, awaiting my ride. Now, when I'm returning to New Orleans this time, let's remember that I had given up my little apartment.
Okay.
So I needed a place to stay. Well, Jim had it. Now, you know New Orleans.
I do.
And you know Royal Street, which is very nice.
Yeah.
Jim had a beautiful apartment on Royal Street. Wow. It had like two or three bedrooms. And he was split up from his old lady. And he was like, yeah, you know. So when I returned to New Orleans, which was early January, I mean, I didn't come down there with much money, a few dollars. And within a, maybe that first weekend, Bo came down. The Super Bowl was a few weeks away. Yeah. And Bo came down to scout out somewhere we could that he could open up a little store with these licensed products.
Sure.
And Jim's poster was getting near production stage.
Right.
Let's just say if the Super Bowl was February 1st, the Mardi Gras was maybe February 16th. It was very early. Mm-hmm. So Bo came down, and right near Jackson Square, right near where that Alpine Bar was, there was this woman, Jessica, and she had this store with like I don't know how she you ever see a store where you're like,
yeah,
how did they make any money?
The margins.
She had these trinket items. Wasn't even like your common New Orleans t-shirt shop.
Right.
She just had these oddball trinket items. And she was another alcoholic. And she had a son who was no good. And she'd be more than happy to rent out.
Really?
Like, well, yeah, for the money.
Yeah, that's, you know, I guess she's not making it.
So Bo made a deal with this Jessica woman, and he returned to New York.
Okay.
And in the meantime, I was down there. I think the poster was, I don't have the exact timeline, folks, but the poster was rolling out imminently.
Sure, that makes sense.
So when it came out, it gave me some work. Because I had given up on the idea of going to these events. There wasn't, I don't think there was pro basketball or
no,
pro.
No, the Jazz had moved to Utah by then.
Yeah. I could have went to some college, but it was the winter and I had the other thing. Mm-hmm. So I started working for Jim, distributing his poster, which entailed going around to these stores that are within the boundaries of the French Quarter and out of the French Quarter. It's not like the posters can't be sold outside. So I would go to these stores. I would have to take public transportation. Remember the guy I mentioned, the guy Sarge, the guy that said, kiss a sick monkey's ass. That guy would loan me his car.
Wow.
Here, go ahead. He was so drunk.
After all that dereliction, he still trusted
you. Take the car.
Yeah, everything was different in the 80s, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. No, take the car. So I had the poster. I had the poster all over, you know, as many places as I could. It was a consignment.
Yeah.
Nobody would say they don't want it.
Sure.
And he was, Jim was known as far as his posters, there were artists that every year do an annual to this day. It goes on. So I don't know what year he was in, but he was in his seventh, eighth year.
Okay.
So that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And people are probably wondering, oh, he forgot to talk about Liberal Libby. Libby had rolled into town.
Oh, okay.
Libby had rolled into town. And I was staying at Jim's, and
was the relationship with the other woman still
it was
hot?
Wait, it was
hot,
it was
hot and heavy,
it was
lukewarm
at best.
Okay.
And Libby just said to me, hey, come on, something of that nature. Who am I to despite Debbie's warnings and my promises to Debbie, I was sort of disengaged from her. So it was like, whatever. And I hung out with Libby for an evening. It was no big deal. Debbie was pissed off. Of course, you know, I didn't say anything, but Libby bragged about it to her. So, you know, and it was, you know, it was, see, folks were expecting an exciting story about Liberal Libby, but it just, it happened.
I think we heard more about the mummy.
That was more exciting. It was a kung fu action. So I'm down there. Super Bowl's coming around the bend.
And you got to be praying that the Bears do what everybody thinks they're going to do, right? Because that would bring in a lot of fans and merchandise. And
well, Bo comes down.
Because they're 15-1, or, you know, 14-0, 15-1 that year.
Freddie comes down.
Okay.
And it's your Bo and Freddie, of course, they knew each other. That's how, you know, for years.
Sure.
So Bo sets up his shop. Now, Charter Street, I think it is.
Okay.
Near Jackson's. It's not a prime. It's good area, but it's not like you're getting the Royal Street traffic.
Sure.
It's not like, what's the name of the street where the cough, Decatur?
Oh, Decatur. Yeah, that's where the beignets
Cafe
are.
Cafe du Monde.
Cafe du Monde, yep.
That gets heavy traffic.
It does.
So this is like in between.
Okay.
But there's traffic nevertheless.
Yeah.
So Bo had illusions of grandeur with the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And Freddie had illusions of grandeur with the tickets.
Yeah.
Now, Freddie's coming down there with no tickets.
Oh.
Well, right. This is an era, Ian, when you would go to hotels when you would have to wait till the NFL didn't release it still to this day. They don't release the tickets early.
Okay.
So the NFL would release the tickets like maybe 10 days before the game. A certain percentage, the highest percentile would go to the two teams that were in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The equal percentile to that would go to the hosting team.
Okay.
So let's just say a 70,000 seat stadium, maybe if 10% went to the Bears and 10% went to the Patriots and 10% went to the Saints, well, the rest of them, each team gets a few, and don't forget the sponsors, and don't forget the big wigs and the VIPs, and there's not a lot. So when the people come to town, that's when you would be looking for these tickets. Now, I remember at the time, the tickets were $250.
Wow, even then?
Yeah.
Ooh.
$250. And
that's what I paid for the NFC Championship game down at the link.
Well, yeah. Well, that was face value. It was $250.
Right.
So Freddie comes down and he's coming down with borrowed money. You know, he's got to come because you got to work those things with like, you know, $10,000. You know,
right.
Like if a guy says, yeah, I got 10 tickets there, you know, on the 40-yard line, I want 500 each. And you can turn them over to a broker. You don't have to sell them on the street. Like, in other words, you want to try to buy in advance.
Right.
And sell in advance.
Gotcha.
Freddie never wanted to, you know, be holding the bag, you know, the why did I get involved? So we're all down there. The poster's out. I got my friends from up north.
Liberal Libby still giving you good loving?
It was a one-timer.
All right.
But
hit it and quit it, as the kids say.
Hit it and quit it. Thank you. But We're having a good old time.
Yeah,
it's just fun. If my recollection's right, Bo was there a week and a half before the game.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie came down maybe a week before the game.
Yeah,
and my recollection is definitely right. There wasn't a lot of success.
Yeah.
By anybody. It was very difficult to find tickets, and I remember Freddie's like, oh, you know, I've been here for, you know, it's like 24 hours. Ago. Oh, I haven't picked up any seats. Oh, why did I come down here? And he's saying to me, maybe we should, it wasn't a bad idea. Maybe we should put an ad in the paper.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, who are they going to call? This is pre-cell phones.
Right.
So we're scouring newspapers. We're going to hotels where there's potentially fans.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to buy a few tickets here and there. I don't have any spectacular stories of great buys or and the last thing you wanted to do was to be there the day of the game at the game.
Okay.
Because we didn't want to deal with, you know, and Freddie, yeah. Freddie was, oh, the heat.
Well, yeah, you've already been. Yeah, and I'm sure.
And I'm right. Yeah. So I don't think it was very successful. As a matter of fact, I know it wasn't very successful because Freddie eventually told Bo, he goes, oh, let me go partners with you. With the souvenirs. And yeah. Bo's like, yeah, we'll cut in. So Bo's souvenir thing was going okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not great, but it was okay. And the week of that game, so you had the Bears fans mm-hmm. and the Patriots fans. And one thing I remember was that the Bears fans – when we did have a few tickets, and let's say we paid $300 each, the Bears fans, the Midwestern fans, God bless them. We love you, Midwest.
Yeah,
They weren't, they were frugal.
Okay.
And the Patriot fans, you could get some money from. Mm-hmm. And the another thing I remember is that some of these players, maybe you could rattle off some names. I can't, besides Doug Flutie and Refrigerator Perry.
Jim McMahon.
There you go. Walter That's Payton. Jim McMahon
yeah.
was seen, the quarterback of the Bears.
Bears, yeah.
He was seen 48 hours before the game at 5 in the morning on Bourbon Street, drinking Hurricanes, partying down.
Paul Pierce did that in the NBA Finals about 10 years ago, too.
So, yeah, these guys are partying. New Orleans will suck in.
Yeah.
It's like Vegas.
Yeah.
It'll suck in. So after the game happened,
mm-hmm.
and Bo had the connection for, you know, the T-shirts they put on.
Yeah.
Like whichever team wins, yeah. they print them in advance. So they had printed Bears in advance and they printed Patriots in advance. Who won the game?
The Bears.
The Bears won, right?
Yeah. So, oh, he didn't have the Patriots, did he?
No.
Okay.
We waited and we went to this place. Mm-hmm. There was a place that, you know, they were printing them right down there.
Oh, wow.
At like 11 at night.
Yeah.
And we were able to purchase them, you know, but the problem was the people leave town.
Sure. They're on the first flight the next day.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the point when Freddie went partners.
Poor Freddie.
So, yeah, that was that segment of that trip.
And if you're not watching on YouTube, your face lit up. This may not have been a financial success, but it seems like this was a turning point for you. Whether I don't know if you realized it or not, just your demeanor, the way you're talking about it, how excited you are.
It was fun having those guys, you know, like the people that I had met.
Yeah.
And as kind as Jim, as Debbie was,
mm-hmm.
and as kind as Jim Russell was to let me stay with him. Although it's not like old friends like AJ or even yourself.
Yeah.
But these were guys that I had more akin to, you know, well, Bo was an old friend.
Sure.
You know? So to have them down there. And I remember Bo wasn't a big drinker and a big partier, but he'd party a little. And Freddie was a drinker. But when you're in New Orleans, AJ, it's a good thing that you got your stuff straight. Because if you're in New Orleans, we would start the day at this point of time by going to the Alpine and having, you know, they serve breakfast. Right?
Okay.
And when we were done with breakfast, everyone started drinking.
Wow.
Including, it was just, you know, and Bo got into it.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie was into it.
Yeah.
And it was just part of the culture Well, as crazy as it was.
To tie into wrestling, my aunt Chris used to party with Sam Houston and Rockin' Robin in New Orleans.
Really?
And, yeah. And she would describe it in 91 and 92, 93, kind of as they fell off the map. She would describe the same thing. So I imagine that's something that stuck. You know, when Colt and I went to Cafe Du Mont, it's about 1 a.m., but there was people really in the thick of it. You know, you wake back up the next day and they're still going.
Yeah. And Jim, the artist, he had friends coming in. And that's when the cocaine started coming to town.
Mm.
He had these guys, these people that would come in every year. And Freddie didn't do that.
Yeah.
But it was just a party. And how are we doing on time here?
Oh, we're good. We're good. We can keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I wish I could have more clarity on how, well, Freddie left town a few days after. Bo's stuck with this merchandise.
Right. Yeah. What did he do with Bears? At least it wasn't the Patriots. Right?
And Bo is aggressive too. So he bought like program, you know, the guy at the, from the NFL had, look, I got the Super Bowl programs here. They're $5, but I'll give them to you for a dollar each.
Yeah.
You know, because the game was over.
Right.
So Bo's like, all right, give me 100. You know, and other items. So Bo wound up staying for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie stayed for a couple more days. And I was there because I was still had the, you know, the poster distribution.
Yeah.
And the Mardi Gras was upcoming.
Okay.
Within a few weeks. I should have spoken to Bo. I don't think he stayed for the Mardi Gras, but he wound up liking New Orleans so much that he and his longtime girlfriend, now wife, Linda, another dear friend of mine, they wound up declaring it their favorite city.
Wow.
And go back there all the time. And it all happened from that. But Freddie left. Bo eventually left. I don't know. I think he just donated the stuff to Jessica.
Well, there you go.
At her store. Right? So now there I am.
Yeah. How do you get out?
Well, I'll tell you how I got out. The Mardi Gras was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of my local friends from my hometown, my dear friend Dale, who's passed away, he came down with a buddy of his who I didn't know that well, but it was exclusively to party for the Mardi Gras. Why not? And as it got closer to the Mardi Gras, we use the locomotive breath as our you know, it's like in the shuffling man, you know, just that it just gets so intense. And I remember the weekend before the Mardi Gras, and this wasn't even it was alcohol fueled and drug fueled a little, but I just, the streets get so crowded and it's so intense that, and I was trying to make the rounds to these distributors. I'm thinking that, oh, these posters are going to be selling, you know, and Jim's thinking that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get to these stores because does the Mardi Gras, does it fall on a particular day of the week?
It's Tuesday, right? Fat Tuesday?
Yeah. So that weekend before, I'm running all over the city and the posters aren't really moving that well.
Mm.
I'm figuring I'm going to go to one of these main shops that's on Bourbon Street or on Royal Street.
Yeah.
These really good stores with tons of traffic. And they had 30 posters. They're going to tell me, hey, we're out.
Yeah.
And I'd go there. Well, we sold 8, you know, I'm trying a couple of them did okay, but they weren't flying off the shelves. Most of the people that are down there are there to party.
Right.
And they're not there to buy art. And it was a bit of a bummer. And I saw the writing on the wall.
Okay.
And the writing on the wall that I saw was, this poster is not going to do that well. Jim is nuts. he showed signs of, unmanageable. Well, I showed signs of unmanageability, but he also said, and I was trying to get money, he would give me some money, but I could see what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. This, I was expecting, I'm sure, we've all done this in our lives. Now, if they sell 1,000 of them, blah, 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 done this. We all done this, right? And I'm getting, a dollar for each one, but, and we're probably going to sell 3,000. There was like 5,000 printed. Well, I saw the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. And I saw Jim's habits and the alcohol. And when the cocaine came in, he started going. And the Mardi Gras was only a couple of weeks after the Super Bowl. And I said, I'm going to have to make a move here. Mm-hmm. And there was only one way I was going to be able to escape. And you refer to me here as an honest man.
Yeah.
And I am. But the only way I wasn't going to be able to get any money from this guy. And I was fearing being stuck down there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go to Bo again. And Freddie would have helped me or Bo would have helped me. But I had an easier solution.
Yeah.
I made this thing in my head that Jim is screwing me. Right. Mm. Which he was a little, but I didn't give him the benefit of the doubt. I figured, let me just execute this. It was like a military style operation.
Yeah.
So on a particular day, a few days after the Mardi Gras was over, because when the Mardi Gras is over,
probably becomes a ghost town, I'd imagine.
Yeah. A few days after the Mardi Gras, I just said, I'm going to go around to these stores. Now, if you go into a store and the guy had 30 posters, he doesn't really want to pay you for them until they're all gone.
Right.
And, the idea would be, you gave me 20. I only have one left. Oh, here, let me pay you. Give me another 20. Mm-hmm. So I was going around to all these stores trying to get the guys to pay for what they had sold. Hey, man, I only sold 4 of them. I'm like, and some guys would pay, some wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So in my attempt to go around I don't think I really went far into the further. The sergeant wouldn't give me his car at that point. Or maybe it was impounded or he got arrested for drunk and driving or something. But I went to these local stores and I gathered up enough money for plane fare and pocket change.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell anybody that I was leaving.
Yeah.
And I just went up to Jim's where my stuff was, which wasn't much, mm-hmm. and packed my bag. And I was out of there. And when I went back to New York, that's when I went into the, full time with tickets. I knew the Super Bowl situation solidified me with Freddie, which I'd been solid already, but I knew that I could work with him and just go whole hog into the tickets. And pretty much that's what happened in New Orleans.
Wow. It's incredible.
Incredible?
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, that you're lucky you're alive, number one.
How about that cab ride?
between the cab ride, being able to get out, just surviving. I mean, you have a survival instinct that I don't think I would have. I would have just cried and called my parents,
Well, I did do that, but, at that point, I burned that out. I burned everything. Mm. I burned out everything. So it was easier to to tell a story to myself, which was partially true, that Jim's fleecing me and he's not going to pay me. And so let me just take what's due to me.
Yeah.
And his posters are in the stores and he could have all the money. It's his art and hog's dick.
Hog's dick indeed. So when you get back, one of the first places you see, I presume, is Madison Square Garden. And that's the first place we're going to see next week, because this is the finale next week of season one, where we're talking about different places. We've taken you to London, to Tokyo, to New Orleans. We've taken you to Newark, Delaware, or excuse me, Dover, New Jersey. That's that right. Backwards.
And hopefully if we get up to the magic 75, which we probably have gotten by now,
yeah,
we'll be taking you to Hoboken.
Hoboken.
And we got a lot of good stories about Hoboken.
We do.
Which play into my ticket life, which play into my life beyond New Orleans.
Absolutely. And I'm really excited about next week. I mean, I think you underestimate some of the things that you've done. I think you underplay your accomplishments, like keeping Ring of Honor afloat, but also some of the things you've overcome in your life.
Well, yeah, it's very strange doing this.
Yeah.
You would think it's like a cleansing, but it conjures up a lot of mixed emotions. Mm. And I'm not sad. I'm not embarrassed
right.
to tell these stories, nor am I proud of them, but it's just the way it is, yeah. You know? And, but it goes to show you that if I could come out of this, anybody could come out of this. And, I hope people are enjoying these stories of dereliction, degradation, and a lot of fun in between with the likes of Liberal Libby.
Well, we had a lot of fun last year in April when we went to Madison Square Garden.
That's right.
And the first person the garden saw was me, which was strange on the screen. And then you followed shortly after. In a weird production snafu. I remember I was at the garden first.
Right.
But yeah, that was incredible. And we'll talk about your love of Bruno Sammartino, going to the garden, talking about all the events that you saw there. We can talk about it. Did you ever imagine Ring of Honor would run Madison Square Garden? I don't know that I ever did. I thought it was a joke when I first got the graphic and the ad copy to read.
No, and... you're uplifting me here after I dumbed myself down there. But to think that we started myself going to wrestling, my dad taking me to my 14th birthday, my cousin Mike, remember we talked about the magazines?
Absolutely.
Selling the magazines in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then me working, we're going to get into that in further episodes into great detail with hustling in front of the garden many a day. But then once again to and then all the great events I've seen there, and I just went to Billy Joel a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was at Billy Joel and I'm watching the show. And at the same time, I went with my young friend, Liam, mm-hmm. who you know.
Absolutely.
And I was in, he's aware of us being at the garden. And I said, do you believe it? You know, just a few months ago, we were the man. Yeah. We were the Billy Joel.
Yeah.
You know, and I was out there. So, yeah, it's crazy how things could go. And we're going to tell you some good Madison Square Garden stories. And the highlight of my career, one of the highlights of my life, no doubt about it, last April 6th.
Incredible. I can't wait to talk about it. It's I didn't believe it was real until it happened. And I still don't believe it. And I hope we get back there soon. So, yeah, this has been a great episode, Kerry. I appreciate it. And I think the listeners do you opening up. I know some of these stories aren't the easiest to tell.
They're not.
And I think you're underestimating the power you have in sharing them so that, you know, folks can take inventory and maybe make some better decisions based on where they are in their life.
Right.
So, all right. Well, I love you, Kerry. And we love the listeners, too. We'll catch you back. Episode, I guess, technically 11. But
yo, 11.
Yo, 11. There you go. Worldwide yo. Coming back next week. Last Offense Station for Kerry Ami. And happy wrestling, everybody. God.
For listening to Last Stop Penn Station podcast. Rate, review, like, subscribe, and share on your favorite platform. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or at laststoppennstation.com.